Hey everyone, welcome to the show. What if the things that go bump in the night weren't just stories, but actually walking among us? Today we're taking a deep dive into a mystery horror novel that really leans into that. Sherlock Holmes and Dorian Gray, The Classified Dossier by Christian Klaver.
Oh, I love this one.
It's so good. You can grab a copy using the Amazon link in the description, by the way. And if you enjoy this deep dive, please hit that like button and subscribe for more.
Definitely.
So what's so cool about this book is that you've got these super well-known characters like Sherlock Holmes and Dorian Gray, but then you throw in these kind of unsettling creatures, almost like they're right out of myth.
Right, like it's a collision of classic literature and this dark, almost mythical horror.
Exactly. So we have, of course, the brilliant Sherlock Holmes and his trusty sidekick, Dr. Watson, who, by the way, is our narrator for this whole crazy adventure. And they find themselves in this world where logic and deduction just go right out the window.
Because they're dealing with something they can't explain, right?
Yeah, totally. And then you've got Dorian Gray, this eternally young but super mysterious figure. I mean, we know he's got a dark past, but things are about to get so much darker.
Oh, yeah.
So the story starts with this cryptic invitation from Mycroft Holmes, Sherlock's brother.
Always got to be Mycroft, right?
Right. Stirring up trouble. And this invitation leads them to this huge, grand, Egyptian-themed circus.
The Circus of Mun-Ra.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's not your typical circus either.
No. This is a spectacle, right?
Yeah.
It's steeped in Egyptian mythology. The performers are doing these unbelievable acrobatic feats. They're so strong and agile. It's almost superhuman.
Yeah, but even for the beginning, there's something just off about the performers.
Mm.
Watson even mentions this strange, almost primal scent.
Like you would expect to smell animals, circus animals, but they're not there.
Right. It's like the animals are missing, but their presence is still like hanging in the air.
Exactly. And then the way they're dressed, you know, it's like they're embodying these Egyptian gods, but there's something just a bit wrong about it.
Yeah, you have Anubis,
the
jackal-headed god, right?
Yeah.
But he's got these distinct goat-like features.
You're right. I hadn't thought about that.
And then there's Seth. He's this huge figure, like a towering hyena.
Yeah, very unsettling.
And here's where it gets really, really weird. These performers, they aren't just in costume. They are geest folk, like actually humanoid creatures, but with actual animal features straight out of ancient mythology.
It's like the myths have come to life.
Totally. And the one behind this whole bizarre show, Dorian Gray. He's the circus's ringleader.
Of course he is.
I know, right? It's so perfect. He's charming, he's athletic, and he's an evasive man.
Oh, he's slippery. Remember that scene where Holmes chases him across those rooftops?
Oh, yeah.
It's like he's almost superhuman. His agility, his awareness. You start to wonder what else he's capable of.
Seriously.
Yeah.
It makes you ask, what is Dorian Gray's connection to these beast folk? Why is he so secretive? What's he hiding?
And just as you're trying to figure that out, bam.
Right. And it's not just any murder. It's gruesome. The victim is Khnum, a female beast folk. She's been strangled and mutilated.
But here's where the evidence gets really interesting. The murder weapon, it doesn't match any of the beast folk at the circus.
Right. It's too big, too powerful. And then there's that creepy inscription they find.
Oh, yeah. On a stake driven right into Khnum's body.
Chilling, right.
Yeah.
It says not to go on all fours.
It's like a message, a warning, maybe even a threat, right? And this inscription, it keeps popping up throughout the story. Adds this whole other layer of dread to the mystery.
For sure. And as the investigation goes deeper, Dorian Gray finally cracks. He reveals a bit of his past, admits that he was once Edward Prendick.
Wait, Edward Prendick, as in the guy from the island of Dr. Moreau?
The one and only. Shipwrecked on this mysterious island, ruled by the infamous Dr. Moreau.
Oh, man, this is where the horror element really kicks in. I mean, we all know Dr. Moreau is, well, let's just say he's not exactly known for his ethical treatment of animals.
Yeah, understatement of the century. He's a vivisectionist, completely obsessed with pushing the boundaries of science, no matter how gruesome the experiments. And Gray describes witnessing these experiments firsthand, the screams echoing in the night, the results of Moreau's experiments. It's truly disturbing stuff.
So messed up.
And then it hits you. The connection to the beast folk. They're the products of Moreau's experiments. It's horrifying.
It's like he took those mythical creatures and made them real.
Exactly. And this revelation just ties Dorian Gray even more tightly into this whole mess, makes his motives and his past even more suspicious.
Because now we know he's not just some charismatic circus ringleader. He's got this deep, dark connection to these creatures, to Moreau's experiment.
Right. And as if things couldn't get weirder, Holmes calls in a favor from some unexpected allies, Count Dracula and Mina Harker.
Now that's a crossover I didn't see coming. Talk about a team up for the ages.
I know, right? It's like Holmes realizes this is way beyond a normal crime.
Yeah.
He needs help from people who understand the supernatural.
Yeah, because who better to understand beast folk than a vampire, right?
Exactly. So now you've got Dracula and Mina bringing their knowledge of hypnotism, the occult, all that good stuff to the investigation.
Adding a whole other dimension to this already crazy, tangled web.
So we've got a murder, mysterious beast folk, a connection to Dr. Moreau's island, and Dracula is on the case. Where do we go from here?
Well, that's where we pick up in part two.
Okay, so we're back, and we left off with Holmes and Watson about to go into Moreau's secret lab.
I mean, can you imagine the tension? You're in this dark, creepy place. You know something dangerous is in there just waiting.
It's like walking into a nightmare, and it doesn't disappoint. They run into this creature, something huge, fast, moving in the shadows.
And we never really get a good look at it, right? It's all just glimpses, suggestions, which honestly makes it even scarier.
Yeah, it's left to our imaginations to fill in the blanks. And this whole encounter, it kind of sets the stage for the big showdown, which happens in Moreau's, like, secret zoo.
Oh, yeah, the zoo. That whole scene is just pure chaos. You've got the rhinophant, this massive creature that's part rhino, part elephant, just rampaging through everything. Then you have these vicious staghounds attacking everyone.
All these terrifying creatures just running wild. And then there's Montgomery, you know, the guy from Prendick's time on the island. Yep. He betrays Moreau, which leads to Moreau falling, like, from a really high place.
But we never actually see Moreau die, do we?
Right. It's left kind of ambiguous whether he actually died or not. Maybe he survived somehow.
Well, maybe. And then just when you think things can't get any crazier, bam, we get this huge revelation.
I know, right?
Dr. Moreau, the guy who created all these terrifying beast folk, he'd also developed a cure for, get this, vampirism.
It's a total bombshell. And he gives it to Watson, of all people. Talk about a plot twist.
Right. It's such a crazy turn of events. It makes you rethink everything you thought you knew about Moreau. Was he really a monster, or was he some kind of, like, twisted visionary? I mean, he created a cure for vampirism.
Yeah, it really blurs the lines, doesn't it? And it raises so many questions, like, what's Watson going to do with this cure?
Will he use it? Give it to someone else? Destroy it? I mean, imagine the power of having a cure for vampirism.
It's a lot to think about.
Yeah.
It really makes you consider the ethics of it all, you know?
Right.
Is vampirism really a disease that needs to be cured? Or is it just a different way of being, like Dracula and Mina have shown us?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. And what about the other beast folk? What happens to them after all this chaos?
Well, Bastet, the Puma woman, she kind of steps up as their leader, guides them away from London.
But their future is still uncertain, right?
Totally. I mean, will they find a place where they can be accepted? How do they reconcile their animal instincts with, you know, their desire to be part of a community?
And these are questions that really get to the heart of the book, right? It makes us think about what it means to be human, how we treat those who are different, how we define monster.
Yeah. And remember, we also learned that Moriarty, Holmes's arch nemesis, he'd visited Moreau's island at some point.
Yeah, what was he doing there? Was he somehow involved in those experiments? It's never fully explained, which I think is intentional.
It definitely adds to the mystery. Like, there's this whole other layer to the story, this conspiracy maybe that we're just getting a glimpse of.
Right, and then there's that creature in the lab, the one that moved so fast. It was never explained either, was it?
Nope, just another one of Moreau's creations. Something even more monstrous than the beast folk. Who knows? It's kind of left hanging there, adding to the creepiness.
Definitely creepy. But what about that inscription on the stake? Not to go on all fours. That was pretty messed up. What do you think it meant?
It's open to interpretation, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, it could be like a warning, like don't give in to your animal instincts.
Yeah, stay civilized, stay human.
Right. But it could also be the opposite, like a rejection of those constraints.
Mm-hmm.
Like embrace what makes you different, even if it scares people.
Yeah, I see that. It's almost like a challenge, isn't it? Like, are you going to conform or are you going to be yourself no matter what?
Exactly. And that idea runs through the whole book, this tension between human and animal, control and freedom, conformity and individuality. It's really thought-provoking.
It is. And what about Dorian Gray? I mean, he goes through a lot in this story. He has to confront his past, the trauma of Moreau's Island, the realization that he's not entirely human.
Right. And then he stabs himself, destroys his portrait, like he's trying to kill the monster inside him.
It's a super dramatic moment. But then he survives, which just adds another layer to this whole question of what does it mean to be human?
Yeah. And the Beast Folk, they also go through these huge changes. They start out clinging to Moreau's teachings, but then their faith is completely shattered.
They have to find their own way, figure out who they are and where they belong.
Exactly. It's a journey of self-discovery for them and for Dorian Gray. And even for Holmes, in a way. He's forced to confront the limits of his logic, the fact that there are some things in the world that can't be explained rationally.
It's like the whole story is pushing the boundaries of what we think we know about ourselves, about the world, about the nature of reality itself.
And that's what makes it so compelling. It's not just a mystery. It's a meditation on identity, morality, the consequences of scientific ambition.
And it's all wrapped up in this gothic, horror-infused package that just keeps you on the edge of your seat.
Right. So we've talked about Beast Folk, shadowy pasts, chilling murders, potential cures for vampirism. But now I want to get into the deeper themes, the big ideas that Clay was exploring here. What do you think he's trying to say about humanity and the dangers of unchecked scientific progress?
That's a great question. I think Moreau is really at the heart of that. He represents this kind of scientific hubris, this desire to control and manipulate nature, even if it means causing harm.
And the Beast Folk are the living embodiment of that harm, right? They're the result of his experiments, the victims of his ambition.
Right. But Moreau also represents this potential for good, too. I mean, yeah. He did create a cure for vampirism, even if his methods were questionable.
It's like he's this twisted mirror image of Holmes, both driven by this intense curiosity, this desire to understand the world. But they go about it in very different ways.
Yeah, and that contrast really highlights the importance of ethics, especially when it comes to science. I mean, where do we draw the line? When does progress become dangerous? When do we cross over into playing God?
These are questions that are relevant now more than ever, right? With all the advances in genetics, artificial intelligence, all that, it makes you think about what we're capable of and what the consequences might be.
Definitely. And the book also explores what it means to be human through the experiences of the Beast Folk. They're caught between two worlds, struggling to reconcile their animal instincts with their desire for acceptance.
Right. They face prejudice and fear, but they also have to confront their own nature, the darker impulses that come with being part animal.
Yeah, it's like they're a reflection of our own internal struggles, the tension between our higher and lower selves, our desires and our fears.
And then there's Dorian Gray, who embodies this duality, this capacity for both good and evil.
Mm-hmm.
His connection to the Beast Folk, the fact that he's not entirely human, it forces him to face the monster within himself.
Right. It's like his journey is about accepting that darkness, but also choosing to rise above it.
And what about the supernatural elements? I mean, you have Dracula and Mina, who bring this whole other dimension to the story.
Yeah, they represent the classic gothic horror elements, but they also offer this unique perspective on the events. Like, they've transcended mortality, but they still have to deal with their own demons, their own moral dilemmas.
Right. It challenges our assumptions about who the real monsters are. And that inscription, not to go on all fours, keeps coming back.
I know, right? It's like this haunting reminder of the themes that run through the whole book.
Yeah, this tension between embracing our animal nature and trying to control it. It's all about where you draw the line.
And that line, it's blurry, isn't it? Like, what does it really mean to be human?
It's a question that the book leaves us to ponder, which I think is part of its brilliance.
Totally agree. So we've covered a lot of ground here. We've talked about Beast Folk, scientific ambition, moral dilemmas, and the nature of humanity.
But there's one thing I want to touch on before we wrap up this part. The ending.
Yeah, the ending. It's both satisfying and kind of unsettling, right? We get closure on some things, but it also leaves us with a lot of questions.
We see Montgomery defeated, Moreau's fate is left ambiguous, and the Beast Folk have to figure out their own paths forward. Some of them integrate into human society, others choose to live more naturally.
Right. And then there's Watson, who's left with the cure for vampirism. What do you think he'll do with it?
It's a heavy burden to carry, and the story doesn't give us a definitive answer, which I think is intentional. It's like Claver's asking us, the readers, to consider what we would do in that situation.
Yeah, would you use it? Would you try to help others? Or would you destroy it because the power is just too great?
It's a question with huge ethical implications.
Exactly. It's not just a simple yes or no answer. It makes you think about the responsibility that comes with knowledge, with power.
Right. And that's what makes this book so powerful. It stays with you long after you finish reading it. It's a really tough question, isn't it? Like, what would you do with a cure for vampirism?
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, you could potentially save so many lives, prevent so much suffering. But on the other hand...
On the other hand, what would happen if it fell into the wrong hands? Could you imagine the chaos?
Right. And is a cure even the right answer? Maybe vampirism isn't a disease. Maybe it's just like a different way of being.
Like we were talking about before with Dracula and Mina, they seem to be doing okay. You know, living their lives, finding meaning.
Exactly. It's like this whole story challenges us to look beyond those easy labels, right? Good and evil, human and monster. It's all much more complex than that.
Totally. And I don't know about you, but one thing that really stood out to me was how London itself becomes a character.
Oh, for sure. The fog, the shadows, all those hidden alleys and corners.
It's the perfect setting for a story where, you know, the lines between reality and nightmare get all blurry.
Yeah, it's like the city itself is hiding secrets, just like the characters. And speaking of characters, I gotta say, the way Klever brings together all these iconic figures from literature, it's just brilliant.
I know. Sherlock Holmes, Dorian Gray, Dr. Moreau, even Dracula. It's like he's created this whole literary universe where they can all interact and collide.
And it's done so well. It doesn't feel forced or gimmicky. It's like they all belong in this world together.
It makes you wonder, like, what other stories could be told in this universe?
Right. The possibilities are endless.
So we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive. We've talked about beast folk, scientific ambition, moral dilemmas, even the nature of humanity itself.
It's been quite a journey.
It really has. And for me, one of the biggest takeaways is that idea of belief and how our beliefs can shape our actions, for better or worse.
Oh, absolutely. Like the beast folk, initially, they cling to Moreau's teachings, even as their faith is crumbling around them.
But then Anubis finds a different kind of faith, right? A belief in the inherent goodness of his people, even if the rest of the world sees them as monsters.
Yeah, his transformation is really powerful. It shows that even in the darkest of circumstances, hope and compassion can still exist.
So as we wrap things up here, I want to hear from you, listener. What are your thoughts on this book? What stood out to you the most? What questions are still lingering in your mind?
Yeah, share your favorite moment in the comments below. We'd love to keep this conversation going.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the world of Sherlock Holmes and Dorian Gray, The Classified Dossier. It's been an amazing exploration of mystery, horror, and the complexities of being human.
And until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep those minds engaged.